The hands are what give me the most trouble. Something about the webbing between the fingers, the knobs of knuckles. They are like something moving, something constantly moving. They remind me of crawfish, the way they twitch, crawfish scrabbling about on rocks. I tell my brother this, and he just looks at me, then shakes his head. He has problems of his own, he says, problems I know nothing about. He looks away from me, out the window. On the little pond in the park across the street, there are two swans circling. They are always here when we visit. They mate for life, my brother tells me. Later, when we are home again, together, he looks up from his work and stares at me a long time. Crayfish, he says, not crawfish. He stares out at the table in front of him, the stacks of notebooks and papers, and pulls one toward him, opens it, flits to a blank page. Crayfish, he says, as he writes, then looks up at me. Crayfish. They're not the same thing. He looks back down at the page, then closes the notebook. He shakes his head. Sometimes, he says, sometimes I don't know where you get your information. He looks at me a long time. It makes me worry, he says. And don't you think I already have enough to worry about with my work? He spreads his arm out, gesturing across the table. He shakes his head. Crawfish, he says. These are the kinds of conversations we have. We have been having them for our whole lives, it seems, and I no longer bother to agree or disagree, because usually that entails more of the same, and there is already enough of the same. But back to my father's hands. No, to my brother's work. He is writing a book, he says. A book on the nature of suffering. Among, he always adds, other things. There are other books, too. Memoirs, medical dictionaries, a book on taxidermy. His book on suffering, though, is what he refers to as his major work. So far, he has gotten only as far as a title and a table of contents. The title is Facts, and there are three chapters. Love, God, the body. These are the main causes of suffering, he says, and the absence of them is what will end suffering. And who, he sometimes asks of no one in particular, who should understand suffering better than he? He has been writing this book as long as I can remember. There is not a time I remember when he was not writing this book, but then my memory is fragile and does not serve me well. This is what my brother says. Your memory, he says, does not serve you well. And though everything about how he says it is annoying, I can hardly disagree. But back to my father's hands. Sometimes I close my eyes and pretend they are someone else's hands. My mother's, the hands of a stranger, my own hands touching my own hands. My father wakes every now and then, or at least opens his eyes and looks at me. You, he says, with no inflection, and who can say what he means. We see him once a week, my brother and I, since we have brought him here. When we come here, my brother waits for me to sit with my father and watches the swans. Did I tell you, he says, that they mate for life? He says nothing should mate unless it mates for life. He is impatient to return to his work. This is not, my brother says, a home, not technically speaking. And I suppose he is right if you consider that, technically speaking, a home is a place where people live together, not a place where they are put when their children are waiting for them to die. It is, rather, my brother says, a place for people like my father, who are what he delicately refers to as absent. He used to live with us, but it became tiring. This was my brother's word, tiring, to have him around all the time. Although he was almost never awake and required very little from us. And if there was a place like this, a place for people like him, and if he had a pension to cover it, then why not take advantage of it? Men like my father drift by here. Absent men, my brother says. Men who don't know what is real, any of them. Reality is like a movie to them. Our father, he says, does not know what is real, and that is what became tiring about having him around, even though he was always asleep. Just being in the same house with someone who didn't know what was real was a strain. It was interfering with his work. I've never seen him write on his book on suffering. He stares out at the papers as though he is looking at maps written in foreign languages. He is collecting his thoughts, he says. There is so much to try to understand. This is what I do not understand, he tells me sometimes, that work like this takes time, thought. Sometimes when he is working and I am sitting on the couch reading magazines, I can see that he is watching me. Or thinking of watching me. This is how we live. This is how we have always lived, except that our father used to live here with us. Without him, there is some kind of absence, though it would be hard to put a finger on it exactly. My brother is changing, or has changed. He said our father was watching him all the time, and he had to get him out of here. That and the reality problem. The important thing, he says, is to know what's real. And the only way to know what's real is to pay attention to the facts. Sometimes, he says, the facts of the matter, or the facts of the case. But in any event, he keeps a list of these as well. The world, he says, is facts, nothing else. And to pay attention to them is the secret. And facts, he says, are everywhere. You just have to know where to find them, where to look. Of course, the kind of facts he's talking about are things like mice give you headaches, which is something he said he overheard in line at the grocery store. He wrote it down as soon as he got home. Of course, I know that facts like these are wrong, but sometimes when I watch him write something down, I wish I had something so certain to think about. Lately, he has begun to read them to me. When we return home, the children who live next door to us stop playing and look up, stare at us as we enter our house. My brother stares back at them until one of them, the smallest, sticks out his tongue. My brother shakes his head. Children are monsters, he says, and when we get inside, he pulls out his book of facts. Children, he says as he writes, are monsters. They are not even human beings. They do not understand facts. He closes his book and looks at me. His face seems to be changing somehow, growing paler or thinner, or somehow just less like itself. He looks at me a long time. It is, of course, only a matter of time before I leave.